Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Only Murders in My Mind. And as usual, I have my co-host, Liz Hedgecock. Hello, Liz.
Hello.
And Mike Jackson, sat in the corner.
Still awake. Good afternoon, Carol. Good afternoon,
hello.
Liz.
Hello. Before we'll go back to that episode. Episode 26. And it's gone well over 5,000, what they call views on YouTube now. Well over. So we're quite taken aback, really, aren't we?
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yes. We have no idea why it's gone over 5,000. Yeah. Why that particular one sort of taken off.
Yeah. So if any of you have got any ideas, please tell us so we can try and do it again.
Yes. Our producer tells us it's to do with algorithms and all this sort of thing. So, you know, if you want to subscribe and like and things like that, that all helps with our sort of viewing and how well YouTube push a certain product. Saying that, we don't advertise at all. Nothing we say is because we're getting paid to do anything, is it?
No.
it's out of the love of our hearts. That's what that's our reason for being. So I'm going to say this very carefully. Today, we're going to discuss cross-genre crime. So has anybody got a definition of what that means, please?
To me, it just means the mixture of one or two genres when you're writing crime fiction. So it might, for example, be a mixture of crime and science fiction, or crime and horror, or crime and sci-fi.
Or
crime and romance.
Historical crime.
Historical crime.
Yeah. Crime and a lot of things, really.
Crime and a lot of things,
yeah. So I wonder which sort of, is it a balance? Could one be more obvious than the other? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, the first thing that I was taken to when I was thinking about this is crime and historical fiction. And,
whereas I wasn't, even though I write historical mysteries. So I think I just assume that's normal.
Yeah. Well, see, I immediately thought of Cadfael.
Yeah.
For example.
Oh, yes, of course.
Which is a crime story, but it's set in the 12th century, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So going back a long way.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, in the monasteries in the 12th century. Yeah. So, you know, it's I think it's the setting. When you think about it, if you took a Cadfael murder mystery and took it out of the 20th century and put it in the 21st century, the crime story would be the same, but the character and the setting would be different.
Mm. And, the way they go about.
Yes. So what quality do you think the medieval setting brings to a Cadfael book?
I think it's probably the lack of all the sophisticated DNA, etc. that we have today. Mm. It was real sort of a slog in terms of trying to solve the problem, because they didn't have anything sophisticated. It was really very much a case of talking to people, noticing things about the dead body, such as, you know, oh, you don't usually get that sort of clay around here, or, you know, if he'd be hit on the head with such and such, I'm sure the indentation would be different. I suppose it's much more grounded, much more down to earth for me.
I suppose in those days as well, there would be a lot of herbs and poisons and that would give different, you know, the person that being poisoned might have blue lips or frothy mouth or something like that. Things like that would be, to somebody knowledgeable like a monk.
Yes.
They would know about those sorts
of
things.
Well, also, I assume it wasn't like you could go to the chemist and buy stuff over the counter, like, you know, in the Victorian period, where you could get pretty much anything from your local chemist, no questions asked.
Yeah. I mean,
handy for me.
Yeah. So, talking about the crime and historical genre, is the other one that struck me was the Shard Lake.
Yes, that's been on recently on the...
That's been on the television.
Television, yeah.
You know, and that was set in...
Tudor
times. Henry VIII, Thomas Cromwell. And the thing I like about those, like the CAD file, you know, it's all very down to earth solving the crime, but there's a lot of historical information that goes on, you know, about what London smelt like, yes. looked like,
yes,
you know, dissolution of the monasteries, yeah. power of somebody like Thomas Cromwell.
Yes.
So you've got all that running alongside the crime story.
Yeah.
So yeah. You are literally getting a mixture of two stories. You're getting that yes. historical information and you're getting your crime story as well.
Yes. And yeah. hopefully you're getting kind of the best of both.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of my favourite times in history is the Tudor period. Mm-hmm. Probably because it's one of those that's been written about and portrayed a lot in films, television, and there's so many books about it, factual as far as they know, and ones that have been based on, you know, and that they're absolutely, you know, the other Boleyn girl, was it called the other Boleyn girl?
Yes, it was.
Things like that, I find, you know, really, I mean, one day your friend could be very high in authority, and the next day you could both be in the Tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it helps that you've got, you know, colourful monarchs as well. You've got Henry VIII, yes. you've got Elizabeth I.
Yeah. yeah, and then, of course, Elizabeth, you know, Elizabeth I was, she shouldn't have happened really, should she? You know, she was a queen that nobody really wanted on the throne, but she managed it.
The other thing too, I mean, if you take something like the Shard Lake ones with C.J. Sansom is the author. Would have had to do a lot of historical research as well as having a good crime story.
Yes.
You know, because I think you, even if it's a crime story, if you're setting it in a particular period, you've got to get your facts right.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
Because otherwise people do get upset.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm. Yeah. yeah.
And either they'll let you know or else they'll, you know, give you a bad review and never read another one. So.
Yeah. I think you've got to make a declaration at the beginning of your book that, you know, some of these facts have been stretched a little bit to assist the plot.
Yes. I did have to move a cholera epidemic once.
Yes.
Only by a year, though. I was very restrained.
Yes. So. What would you put in this category for yourself, Liz?
Cross-genre crime. Oh, well, I was thinking, you know, there's science fiction, there's fantasy.
Yes.
So if you think of things like cozy fantasy, which is quite big at the moment. And then the not so cozy crimes such as Stranger Times.
Yes.
Yes, which is definitely in there.
Yeah.
Lots of strange goings on. Yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing is, I've, you know, in my own writing, I've done quite a lot of mashing up different things. So,
yeah, you have,
there's the
you?
Historical crime, and then there's the Magical Bookshop series, which is, you know, got lots of fantasy elements, and then there's my ghost suspense series, which has got the supernatural and it's got sort of, you know, time slip stuff going on and, you know, cold cases and whatnot. So
I like the crime and fantasy. I mean, Ben Aronovich.
Oh, yes.
The Rivers of London.
So oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, I like those, yeah. I mean, I was going to talk about Stranger Times as well, because I've got down here, we've got newspaper, it's funny, the occult, magic, detectives, crime. It's got a bit of murdering. It's got it all, hasn't it, in the Stranger Times. Yeah. I've just started listening to, I think it's book 3 as an audio book. Yeah. And, they're absolutely marvellous.
Yeah. I'm listening to, and again, I think it fits into this cross-genre one, by Jodie Taylor, The Time Police.
Oh, heard of that, yes. Yeah.
And I'm just listening to book 5, the last book. It's tremendous, very, very amusing. But the whole idea of having time police who track down people who have pods and disappear into the future or the past and can cause all sorts of problems, it's intriguing.
I am going to mention you may not have heard of, you may have heard of it, it's called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night Time. And the reason I mention this, I have read the book and I've seen the play.
Oh.
Can't say that very often. And this for me fits into this category because it's about a 15-year-old boy, Christopher Bone. he's on the autistic spectrum, and he tries to solve a death, a murder. I won't say any more than that because I'm not putting any spoilers in. So there was quite a lot going on there. It was how this person who saw things differently from the rest of us tried to solve this crime, and it took you to a different place, you know, sort of mentally it took you to a different place. The play was amazing because it was very minimal sort of things on the stage, the scenery. There were boxes basically and lighting and things like that. But you may have heard of that, the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime refers to a Sherlock Holmes observational, no, that's right, that's wrong. A title refers to Sherlock Holmes' Adventure of the Silver Blaze, where he actually said, that was a phrase he said.
Yes. The dog did nothing in the nighttime. That was the curious incident.
Yes, exactly. So that's where it comes. It's quite a long title, isn't it, for a book?
It is.
It worked out all right for him, though.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one. And as I say, Stranger Times always fits into that.
I mean, with the Stranger Times, there's a mixture of that sort of crime and fantasy.
Definitely.
And humour.
Oh, I was laughing.
It's that whole crime and humour. And The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, there is a murder in there, a murder mystery in there.
Who got murdered?
I can't remember, but
I'm trying to think now.
It's a long time since I've read it.
I wouldn't ever have thought of that as a crime book, but there we go.
Maybe that's one I need to go back and check up on.
We need to talk about a long time since I've read it. On the subject of time travel, it was National Cinema Day.
Oh,
yes. And we did the Terminator 1 and 2 double bill. So lots of going back in time to sort stuff out there, which was...
The other one wasn't, though, was it, that you saw?
That was... we saw Coraline in 3D.
Yes, we did.
Fab.
Yes. Yes, it was excellent. I've got to say, the first two Terminator films, I absolutely loved them. And my middle son, who was only small when they came out, used to watch them, and they didn't faze him at all. They're quite frightening, really, aren't they?
Oh, in bits, yeah.
However, he did watch a noddy video one night and had nightmares for the next three nights. So, you know, I'm just saying, we've got a strange family.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to think who'd be more disturbing turning up, you know, noddy and big ears.
Or they'd scare you, wouldn't they?
Yes, come with me if you want to ride in my little red car.
Yes, yes, I'll be back.
when you hear the bell on my hat.
Yes, ding-a-ling-a-ling. What was that? What was that joke? No, I can't remember it now. If I remember it, I'll come back to it.
I'm keeping very quiet here because I've never watched these two films. And I'm just putting it down to
You've never seen?
No, but I'm just putting it down to the fact that Carol and Liz are having funny moments talking about big ears and noddy and what have you. But I'll just go back to sleep while they carry on.
We were talking about time travel, which you started it.
Yes, so, well, I like time
travel. You're partly to blame. But yeah, how can you never have seen either Terminator? I mean, I've never seen Terminator 2 before this weekend and I thought I was strange.
I must have lived a very sheltered life.
It's just not your thing, is it? That sort of. No.
But you like futuristic stuff.
I do.
You should try it.
Are you saying before you've never seen Blade Runner?
Nope, never seen Blade Runner.
Wow.
I know.
We'll have to take him for a cinema night, won't we?
Definitely. Yes.
Sounds a bit scary, but.
Yeah, it'll be noddy and big ears the road trip.
So has anybody got anything they want to read out on this particular subject? Because as I say, Liz actually writes in this cross genre, don't you?
Yes, I'm starting to wonder if I actually write anything that isn't cross genre, to be honest with you. Slightly concerned now.
You know your rom-com that you're...
Yes.
Is that cross genre?
It's got a tiny bit of mystery in it.
Tiny bit of mystery.
So yeah, even there I can't resist like messing around. So.
Yeah, she puts a little tiny question mark in the plot to be figured out.
Okay. Ghosts or vampires?
Vampires.
Okay.
I'm quite worried about Carol. This afternoon. I'm quite worried about Carol most afternoons.
Yes, this is true.
Right, so the bit I'm going to read is a bit from the Magical Bookshop series where the staff of the bookshop are kind of interesting people, and where we are at this point is that they are trying to infiltrate some premises they're not supposed to be in, and they've managed to get themselves invited to a meeting, which is a great start, but actually, you know, sneaking off and investigating what's going on in the rest of the building is proving a bit more difficult. However, luckily, one of them's a vampire.
Yep.
Always so, handy.
Yes, it is. You should always have a vampire with you when you try and infiltrate a building. Okay, so I'll read a little bit of that. We shall proceed to item 1.3, intoned the chairperson. Revision of the company's management structure. Gemma nudged Raphael, who jumped and sat up straight. Was I asleep? He whispered. You were snoring, said Gemma, but only quietly. You know that time we saved on the journey? Muttered Carl on her other side. I reckon it's been put into this meeting. Shh, said Gemma. I'm trying to concentrate. I ought to be interested in this, organisational structure and all that. But the chairperson droned on in his soothing voice about the history of the organisation and the reason why making a minor change was extremely important, and she felt her own eyelids drooping. She made herself sit up and studied the large mahogany table where the board sat. As Em has said, it was full of middle-aged men in suits, some with hair, some not, sitting in a wood-panelled boardroom with a high vaulted ceiling. To reach the boardroom, they had climbed a grand staircase straight out of a stately home. Whatever they do, thought Gemma, they must be good at it. Then again, if most of your work was underground, boring was presumably an advantage. She suppressed a snigger and peeped at the other members of the public, sitting on the rows of chairs around her like an audience. They were generally well-heeled, middle-aged to slightly elderly, and had cast curious and disapproving glances at the bookshop contingent when they entered. Local people, maybe, or investors? And now an update on the Charing Cross transportation hub, said the chairperson, and she jerked to attention. After a few setbacks due to site issues, everything appears to be proceeding smoothly, and as envisaged, we shall be able to meet the project milestone circulated in the position paper we presented at the previous meeting. Cleared his throat. That is the end of the open section of this meeting, he said, addressing the rows of seats. If you would leave by that door, we have refreshments waiting for you. That's not fair, muttered Em. What about questions? I don't think they do questions, Gemma murmured back. Maybe if we hang around, we can listen in. One of the younger men sitting at the table stood up. If you would come this way, he said with a pleasant smile, and opened the door for them to leave. Gemma was one of the last to go, and outside the door she stopped to retie the shoelace she'd pulled undone a minute before. The man waited for her to finish. Refreshments are in the second room on the right. I'll take you down in a moment. Is there a bathroom I could use? Asked Gemma, hopefully. Oh, yes, he said. We have two bathrooms opening off the refreshment room. And he shepherded them along the corridor. Gemma noted that no sound came from the boardroom. Either the inhabitants were waiting until they'd gone or it was soundproof. When they reached the refreshment room, she pulled the others into a corner, despite Raphael's longing glances at the finger sandwiches and vol-au-vents. What are we going to do? We have to get into that meeting. No chance, said Carl. Check out Sheepdog over there. The man who'd escorted them was consulting his watch and eyeing the door. I bet this place is crawling with security. I counted at least 20 cameras on the way up here. Hang on a minute, said Luke. He went to the buffet table, got a plate and piled a handful of sandwiches on it. He folded one into his mouth as he came back. Rare roast beef and horseradish, he said. Lovely. I'm sure it is, said Gemma, frowning, but we're not here to enjoy the hospitality. Maybe we are. Luke bolted another sandwich. Thing is, they'll notice if somebody tries to sneak in, but there are other ways. What other ways? Asked Gemma as Luke stuffed another sandwich into his mouth. I think I understand, said Raphael. He cupped his hand to Luke's ear and whispered. Luke nodded. That's it. I haven't done it for ages, but I'll give it a try. He drew Maddie closer and whispered to her. She looked at him, eyes wide. You'd do that for the bookshop? She flung her arms around him. Raphael leaned down to Gemma and whispered, Luke will assume bat form. Oh, Gemma stared at Luke. Wow. So this is the plan, said Luke once he'd finished his fifth sandwich. Maddie and I leave. I need someone to mind my clothes, and obviously I can't do this here. I'll do my best to get in. If I can't, I'll come back. You stay till they kick you out, then return to Gertrude the van, and Maddie and I will join you there. I hope. Excellent, said Raphael and wandered over to the buffet. Gemma gazed at Luke as he wolfed yet another sandwich. I feel as if I should shake your hand or hug you or something. Don't worry, said Maddie, laying her hand on Luke's arm. I'll do all that. She gazed at Luke, starry-eyed. Are you sure you don't mind me seeing? Luke played with the end of her plait. As long as you're okay with it. Of course I am, she said. It's part of who you are. Her eyes sparkled. Come on, let's go.
Oh. Vampire love.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, you have to kind of think of all the technicalities with vampires and stuff. So, because he can't be just one bat.
No.
Got to be a lot of bats.
Yeah.
Mm. And there's a slight complication.
Yeah, science comes into it.
Well, I figure it's a mass thing. I mean, you can't just turn into one small bat, can you, if you're a full-size person? No. So. And this is all the stuff you've got to think about. So in some ways, it does mean extra work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun work.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's not like the historical where you have to get your facts right. But with something like fantasy and science fiction, you've got to make sure that you keep your facts consistent.
Mm.
And to a certain extent, with vampires and things, you almost need them to be in every ordinary person's idea of what a vampire is. To a certain extent.
Or they've got to, because it's difficult, because on one hand you think, well, they can't be exactly the same as, you know, all the other vampires, because otherwise it gets a bit
boring,
sleeping in the coffin and whatnot.
Yes, yeah. So it's finding that twist, isn't it?
Mm. I want to drink your blood.
Mm. I've just been looking up. Did you know?
No, I had no idea.
I didn't think you would have done.
No.
But in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
yes,
there were millions of deaths. Hundreds and hundreds. Do you want to read some out to you?
Yeah, well, there was the business with the bypass, wasn't there?
Yes. And in the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Oh, yes.
The dish of the day committed suicide and was later eaten.
Oh, yes.
10 unnamed environmentalists shot by a disaster area representative.
Oh, and there's the whale.
There's
the bowl of petunias and the very surprised-looking whale. Although that's not so much a crime as unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, 10 unnamed Vogon shipmates were wiped out by the prosthetic Vogon adults in a disciplinary exercise.
Mm. Oh, and there was the poetry as well.
See?
Oh, yeah.
That killed a few people.
Which boot was the depressed robot in? Was that the Hitchhiker's Guide?
He was in all of them, yeah.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I'm so depressed.
Have you written any, Liz, that cross genre, that romance and crime?
Well, that's an interesting one, because like when it's romance and crime, it's sort of, you've got a line, and if there's more romance than crime, it becomes romantic suspense. So yeah, the Mrs. Hudson books are kind of, I think there's still more crime than romance.
Yes, I agree with that.
Having read them. There you've got historical, you've got crime, and you've got romance.
So it's
going
a bit like your Maisie. Is it Maisie?
Yeah. I mean, there quite often is an element of romance going on in there.
It's sort of.
You see what
lingering.
I mean? I just can't stop messing about.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
you're crossing your cross genres.
I am, yeah. Tragical, comical, historical, pastoral, just wait.
And The Warrington Detective. When it has a love interest, and in later books there is somebody else as well that's possibly infatuated with her, but it is very low key in those books.
Is that going to ramp up at all?
I think it might.
Interested readers want to know.
I think the thing with cross genre, some of the stuff we've talked about, for example, the historical and crime, because it is specifically, it's almost clear cut. Two genres there.
Mm.
There's the historical aspect and the crime aspect.
Yeah.
That does at least open it up to appeal to two different audiences. There will be people out there who like reading historical stuff.
Yeah. I think there's something around balance as well. Because it can be kind of interesting when you've got, for example, historical and romance. Mm. And it's like, you know, you're going to have a sort of an arc for both of those things. And it's how you manage it, because You know, maybe when it comes to, like, you know, the big crisis and they thought it was going great and all of a sudden, no, it isn't going great at all and you actually messed up completely. It's like, do you compound that by having some kind of, you know, romantic misadventure, or do you kind of keep that going? Or you've got lots of decisions to make and, you know, think about, well, if I have too much of this, is it going to unbalance it? Or is it going to, you know, if I have too much romance, is it going to make the crime seem trivial?
Yeah.
So
it is about getting that balance, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? I mean, at the moment, as I say to you, I'm listening to these Jodie Taylor books, The Time Police. And
I have read one of them, but I had a question and I thought, if that had happened, then that will kind of knock out all the books.
Yes.
Right. I felt like, you know, I had to do a lot of willing suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. I think you do. I think quite often when you're going down that fantasy dystopian road, you have to suspend belief.
You do, yeah.
Because again, with some of these time police stories, you know, they're going back in time to stop people from interrupting time. You think the fact that they were there may interrupt time. So you do have to. But then again, that's the joy of books like that. It takes you into the world of make believe. You know, where actually people like to read books like that because they like to suspend belief or suspend.
Yeah, and reality. Quite often it's quite nice to go off into another world and think, oh, it's all going to turn out. It'll be fine.
I used to get myself into absolute knots trying to figure out how the Terminator got there and how he got back and in the second film, you know, what happened and if they do that, it's going to mess the whole, you know, reality up. And I used to overthink it instead of going, this is a really good film, you know.
Yeah, I think you just have to go with the flow. Have you seen Austin Powers?
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a character called Basil Exposition, which is great. And at one point he just turns to the camera, I think Michael York plays him, and just says, you know, I don't think you should worry about that, you know, people who are watching. Just, you know, accept it and let's carry on. And then just turns back to the scene.
Go back on.
That's kind of how I feel about The Terminator.
You see, when I watched The Matrix, all three films, never entered into my head that this is not possible.
I think it's a measure of the success of it as well, how much you're willing to go along with it.
That's true, yeah.
With the Time Police book, I just kind of thought, not sure about that.
But Stranger Times.
Yeah.
There's another one where, you know.
Oh, I'm absolutely invested in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
it's,
am
it's
I.
All, it's on, just unreal, you know.
But you've got, you know, when they do the headlines on the news about, you know, what's coming up, and you think, but you do hear things like that, don't you? If you Google things, it'll be like, vampire landed on roof in Notting Hill during the carnival and killed three people.
It's like that thing in Men in Black where they get all their news from, like, the National Enquirer and the World Weekly News and all those, you know, papers that everyone thinks are just, you
know. Stranger Times should have been in with them.
Yes, definitely. I'm wondering if that's where he kind of got the idea from.
He might have done, So as I say, it's it is about just enjoying the moment, isn't it, when you're watching these films.
So what do we think the benefits are of mixing genre?
I think it can sometimes, going back to what I said about the crime and historical fiction, it can draw in a different audience.
Yes.
You know, somebody who likes historical fiction, or somebody who likes romance and likes a bit of crime mixed in. I suppose it depends on which, you know, whether it's an equal balance. For example, I think the Cadfael that we talked about and the Shard Lake ones are very historical with a crime thrown in.
Right.
Rather than,
so it's historical with crime rather than crime.
That's my opinion of those. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you are expanding your audience by doing that, aren't you? By having this crossover of ideas.
Yeah.
People who, as you say, like something with a historical background will really enjoy them. I mean, I've seen some of the ones on the television and I have enjoyed them. I've not read the books. And I think I'm just trying to think of something. I can't think of the name, and it was a male and female detective. It was lighthearted. I'm going back a lot of years now, and they pretended to hate each other, but they didn't. You know, everybody knew that.
Wasn't Moonlighting, was it?
It was. You're
Boom.
Right.
Well, I'm such a guesser.
Liz. But that's exactly what it was, wasn't it? They used to pretend they didn't like each other, and there was always that undercurrent of romance.
Did you watch it for the cases, though, or did you watch it for Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis?
Yeah. The second one.
Yeah, so Cybill it's probably romantic suspense then, rather than mystery or crime with a bit of romance.
My daughter was in New York a while ago, and she crossed Bruce Willis's path. He was coming out of a restaurant that she was going into. She said, "He smiled at me, Mum."
Wow.
That's what I said. So I think probably that winds it up talking about Bruce Willis and his dreamy eyes.
I think that's probably a good place.
Possibly before Mike explodes all these rabbit holes that we've gone down.
And I still can't remember the noddy joke. I apologise.
If we remember, we'll put it on the blog or something, or in a future episode.
Oh, it's something about big ears.
And ransom. While we're winning, let's stop.
All right, then.
Are we winning? Awesome.
Can I just mention very, very quickly that there is, of course, the Only Murders in My Mind blog post. And there's a couple of posts go up every week. So if you just want to find out a bit more about us, please feel free to go and have a look. It can be found on WordPress, onlymurdersinmymind.wordpress.com.
That was very professional.
But I thought that.
Yeah, yes. Very good. Yes. Yes.
I'm just trying to put you two to shame. Have the BBC heard instead of talking about noddy jokes. But we also do a weekly writing prompt on there. If anybody fancies writing a story, put it on there or give us a link to your blog. And we'll have a look at it and maybe read some out.
Fantastic. Right. Looking forward to seeing what you send us.
And don't forget to like us on YouTube, give us a review, like us, make a comment on the blog post, send us money, whatever.
Carol and I do not endorse that last remark. Actually, you know, what am I saying? Yeah, if you want to send us money, that's brilliant.
But so... please do not send us your noddies and big ear jokes. Please.
Yeah, somebody offered me sterling money for giving the child a vaccination once because we were from another country and they were used to paying. And I was going, no, it's free.
Aww. And my colleague, I would have said, no, that's not enough.
My colleague behind me, only joking I'd like to point out, was sort of going, we could have a drink. We didn't take it, obviously. We were professional. Right. Well, with that, I will wind this episode up. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening once again. And we'll see you the same time next week. Bye for now. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.